Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Monday, November 23rd, 2020. I'm Steven Jensen. Sorry for the delay on the episode this week, y'all. Normally I record these on Sundays. This past weekend at my condo complex, they were doing landscaping and cutting down trees right outside of my building. So as you can imagine, it was just a bit too loud. I didn't want y'all to have to try to bear with me listening to the sound of chainsaws and wood chippers destroying trees right outside of my building, so that's why the episode's a day late. I hope y'all understand, but we're still going to talk about everything we would have over the weekend, just on a Monday instead of a Sunday this time. And thanks for coming along with the journey with me, like you always do. And like I said, sorry about that. I know it's a day late, but it'll be the same exact show you would have got yesterday, so just a day later. And also, happy early Thanksgiving to everybody who celebrates. That's going to be coming up this Thursday. I'm looking forward to spending some time with my family, a whole bunch of good food, good people, good memories, hopefully. So I'm looking forward to that. And if you're celebrating, happy early Thanksgiving. Before we get into the topics, I'm going to go ahead and just tell you what they are, like I always do. We're going to go through a list of the topics and then we'll jump into them. So on this edition of the Weekender, we have MLW Fusion results, the restart. I am super pumped that Major League Wrestling is back. Can't wait to talk about that. We have results for Impact Wrestling, 205 Live, NXT UK, Ring of Honor, UWN, and I have a recap of the latest Being the Elite episode titled Trent vs. Silver. Before we get into all those topics, as always, I have my recommended show to watch on independentwrestling.tv, and my show this week that I've recommended is Action Wrestling's Friday the 13th. So the company is called Action Wrestling, that's A-C-T-I-O-N, and the show is Friday the 13th. This happened on, you guessed it, Friday, November the 13th, 2020, so just 10 days ago, and these are the matches to expect. This was from Tyrone, Georgia, by the way. We had Lutha X versus Bobby Flacco, Kevin Ryan versus Braden Lee versus Graham Bell versus Sean Christopher in a four-way. We had Cole Radrick versus Brett Eisen, Anthony Henry vs. Kyle Matthews, Alex Kane vs. Damian Tangra, Shug D vs. Cabana Mandan, and in the main event for the Action Championship, we had AC Mack vs. Trey Lamar. A ton of great talent on these shows. Not only great talent on the shows in-ring, but also on commentary as well. Dylan Hales and John Mosley, two people that I consider to be friends. John Mosley, actually my co-host on Fight Talk, my personal podcast. He comes on every week and we talk about mixed martial arts. Speaking of my podcast, Fight Talk, once again, if you search that on all major platforms, just search Fight Talk. You'll see my name, Steven Jensen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N-J-E-N-S-E-N. And the reason I'm bringing up my podcast this week is because in a few weeks, speaking of Action Wrestling, the promoter, owner, pretty much the face of Action Wrestling, Matt Griffin, is going to be coming on my show to preview the next big Action Wrestling show. It's happening on December the 11th. But that all being said, that's going to be in a couple weeks. Just wanted to give you all a heads up about that. And since I'm talking about the company, they have a lot of great stuff going on. This show being a perfect example. The reason I mentioned the commentary, Dylan Hales, somebody that I really, really respect when it comes to his opinion, especially when it comes to like upcoming wrestlers that I might not know so much about. If he starts mentioning them, I start paying attention. And Cole Radrick, who's on this show, is someone I've been talking about a lot lately. And on this Action show, while on commentary, Dylan actually said Cole Radrick, in his opinion, is the most improved wrestler in the last, I think he said the last 2 years or so. And I think that's a huge compliment, really high honors for a guy like Radrick. A guy that I've been saying for a little while now that I just think he keeps getting better and better and better. He had a match with Brett Eisen on the show that I thought was really, really good. And yeah, I mean, Cole, let me put it this way. I think that Dylan probably, I can't speak for him, but I believe me and him had a conversation and we were pretty much on the same page when a few years ago I had said the most improved wrestler on the indies a couple years ago was Warhorse Jake Parnell. And Warhorse has now become, you know, the independent wrestling champion. He's been the champion for over a year now, the record amount of title defenses. He even wrestled Cody on AEW television for the TNT title. So to say that Cole Radrick is kind of that next guy, the next most improved guy, you know, after Warhorse. You know, he had his levels of improvement and then hit the levels he's at right now. To say that about Cole Roderick, I think, is a huge compliment. And shout out to Jumpin' John Mosley. Anyone who, if you get that, you get it. If you don't, you don't. But anyway, Cole Roderick versus Brett Eisen was on the show, and I thought it was really, really good. Brett Eisen's a guy that I talk about just every episode of this show, so I sound like a broken record talking about him. But shout out to Brett. Him versus Cole I thought was really, really good. Other people I want to mention on this show and give some shout outs to: Graham Bell was a part of the four-way. Graham Bell, in my opinion, had the best match of 2020 against Manders for this same company, Action Wrestling. And I'm not talking about best match of the year for Action. In my opinion, it was the best match of the year of 2020 for any company. Now, I'm sure others will disagree, but I think you should really check that match out. I think Graham Bell is super talented. He has a unique look. He carries a damn bazooka out to the ring. He's really good in the ring, and he has traveled to Japan and all over the place to hone his craft. And I really, really, really like him. Another guy I really like in this four-way match is Kevin Ryan. He's a guy that I see a lot of potential in. I see a lot of potential in pretty much every person on this show. But Kevin Ryan's someone I'm definitely keeping my eyes on. He has a certain level of charisma that draws me to him. But he also has like this level of youth. Like he looks very young. I don't know his actual age, but he looks very young. And I think that he's just going to keep getting better and better and better. Similar to a Cole Roderick. Different in character, but similar in potential. Because I think Cole is a few levels ahead at the moment. But I think Kevin Ryan is going to be a really big deal. I think people should keep their eyes on him. Some other people I'd like to mention here. Some other matches. We had Anthony Henry versus Kyle Matthews. This is a match I think people should definitely go out of their way to check out. Anthony Henry. I've said this before. I've said it on Twitter. I know people agree. I know some people disagree. But I'll just go ahead and say it. And this is no knock to anybody else. I said this during my review of The Collective as well for Fightful. Anthony Henry, I honestly don't understand how he isn't signed to a major company at the moment. I feel like that time may be coming. It may have already come. I don't know yet. But what I do know is Anthony Henry has deserved it for a really, really long time. And Kyle Matthews is a guy who's been wrestling for a really long time too. He's a veteran who kind of flew under the radar for most people for a long time, and he does great work, especially in the Southeast. And Kyle actually retired a few years ago, and it's cool to see him back. He's still really, really good, and both these guys are just really good. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Action show that happened. There was two Action shows over the weekend. I'm going to try to shout out the name of the show. I think it was Friday Night Fights Part 2, I believe, is what it was called. But they actually started basically what it looks like going forward is on the December 11th show, they're going to have Anthony Henry versus Shug D. And at the end of Friday Night Fights Part 2, the two of them cut promos on each other that I would recommend any wrestling fan check out. Even if you're not familiar with Anthony Henry or Shug D. Shug D, by the way, was Pineapple Pete on AEW as well, so you may be familiar with him from there. They cut these promos on each other to build up their match for December 11th that I thought were just absolutely incredible promos. And Shug D goes in hard on Anthony Henry, saying stuff like, you know, he's tired of listening to Henry whine about not getting signed to a major company and whether he's going to retire or go off to the WWE or AEW or wherever he winds up going. It feels like Anthony Henry will not be on the indies much longer, whether it's because he signed somewhere or because he just walks away from wrestling completely. And Shug D, they really cut deep on these promos. They really did. And Anthony Henry, you know, went back at him over the Pineapple Pete stuff and all that, and him never reaching his full potential, and really, really, really good stuff. So, you know, speaking of Shug D, him and Cabana Man Dan, great match there too, great story. Cabana Man Dan, another guy that is just awesome to see him, you know. I don't know how much of this is known. I know so many people behind the scenes that I have a hard time remembering sometimes what's public knowledge and what isn't. But Cabana Man Dan, just for those of you who might not know, and I might be speaking a little bit out of school by saying this, I don't know, but Cabana Man Dan was actually supposed to wrestle Warhorse for the IWTV Championship recently. And that would have been a really big match for Cabana Man Dan. I don't know if he would have won or not, but it was going to be something that was going to really spotlight him, and it's something that I know Dan personally really, really wants as a shot at that championship. He held the New South title for a long time. He has done great stuff in SUP and Action and SCI and everywhere he goes, Black Label, everywhere. And yeah, it would have been really cool to see Dan in Warhorse. And I feel like it'll still happen at some point, but the reason it didn't, you know, COVID-related stuff, you know, it just, you know, plans are on. Unfortunately, plans just continually have to change right now, you know, throughout this year for everybody. So, shout out to Cabana Man Dan. Him and Shug D had a great match, and I really hope Dan gets that IWTV shot against Warhorse in the very near future. And then the main event, AC Mack, one of my favorite guys in indie wrestling. I mean, as a character, he's one of the most compelling because he's so good at playing a jerk. And I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to. For those of you who listen to The Weekender, I give you all little Easter eggs, little behind-the-scenes things every now and then. AC Mack is one of the biggest jerks in the history of wrestling on screen, and he is one of the nicest guys I've ever talked to outside of wrestling. It's just one of those things where it's very, when I met AC Mack for the first time, I've known AC Mack longer than MJF, but I had met MJF before AC Mack somehow, and like in person. And when I met MJF, he stayed in character and he was a total jerk to me, but I respected it. I was like, okay, I get what he's doing, right? With AC Mack, I went into it thinking it was going to be the same way, where I was going to be like, oh, I'm going to talk to this guy and he's going to totally just kayfabe me and he's going to just, you know, well, I'm interested to see how much he rips on me, basically, for being a fan. And I talked to him and he's like the nicest guy in the world. And it's like, man, it makes me really happy. I mean, I'm happy for MJF too, but he's kind of an anomaly. But AC Mack, if y'all are ever at like an indie show and AC Mack is there and you see him wrestle and you just think to yourself like, oh, he's such a jerk that like I don't even want to go buy a t-shirt or ask for an autograph or try to get a picture with him because he's just going to be a jerk to me. He won't be. You'll have a great experience. And Trey Lamar, his opponent, I really think is going to be a big part of this next wave of indie stars. I talk about that totem pole all the time on this show. For longtime listeners, you know exactly what I'm talking about. For newer friends, I'll explain it a little bit. I basically see independent wrestling as a totem pole, where right now we have people that have hit the peak of the totem pole and they're moving on to other things, AEW, WWE, wherever it may be. And right now there are guys like Alex Zane. Here, let me say this. I won't name names. I'll say Alex Zane because that's public knowledge now. I heard of 6 people that had recently signed with major companies about a month ago. Of those 6, Alex Zane, it's pretty public knowledge now that he's heading to the WWE. There's 3 others that I've heard signed, and I heard that before they recently departed Impact Wrestling, and we're going to talk about that on this show. The Rascals, you know, I heard that they got contracts about a month ago. I'm not going to say where they got contracts, but I heard that they were going to be leaving Impact Wrestling. And then there's 2 others that I don't want to mention because I don't want to burn those bridges with my sources, but it's something where there's 2 other guys that I know of that I talk about a lot on these shows that I've heard have signed some big contracts with some major companies. And because of those kind of signings and others that I talk about on the show all the time, I don't want to name names to give anything away, but a lot of the people on the tippy top of that totem pole for me are going to be moving on soon. Some people that already have, like, good examples being a guy like Eddie Kingston was at the top of that totem pole for a long time. Kurt Stallion was on the top of that totem pole. Obviously, we see Kurt Stallion being successful in 205 Live right now at the WWE. Josh Briggs, I know he's a bit controversial outside the ring for some reasons right now. But as far as in the ring and with his look and everything, I was like, yeah, this guy's for sure going to get signed. It's just a matter of time. So more and more of these guys and girls are getting signed, and it's going to really open things up for people like Trey Lamar. I think Trey Lamar is going to really be a big part of the future of indie wrestling over the next couple of years. And he's the kind of guy with the kind of talent that can leapfrog him. Because perfect example being Alex Zane. Alex Zane is a guy that I think is really, really entertaining. In the ring, he's fantastic. He's the kind of guy that, like, not only can he do all the cool moves, he's crazy. Like, I've watched him literally jump over the top rope, headfirst into a trash can, and get hit with a chair at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to be doing that stuff in the WWE, I'm sure. But it's like, he has the mindset to, like, just do whatever it takes to get a reaction out of the crowd. But the reason I bring up someone like Alex Zane is because he's so damn entertaining in the ring and the stuff that he does that the rest of it will come. Like, I don't think he has the most compelling character. And the things that he does and the way that he markets himself on the indies just isn't going to work on the WWE because his entire gimmick's basically based around Taco Bell. And there's no way that WWE is going to allow that, right? So it's like, he's going to have to figure out a character and he's going to have to get better on the microphone. And there's going to be, but my point is, he's so damn good in the ring and he's so entertaining and he has such a good mind for wrestling that he was able to kind of leapfrog that top part of the totem pole to me, if that makes sense. So I would have had Alex Zane kind of like the second tier of the totem pole. And he was able to basically leapfrog that, and rightfully so. Like, by the way, this isn't me saying that he shouldn't have got signed. He definitely deserves that WWE contract 100%. I'm a huge fan of his. But you know what I'm saying? It's one of those things where, like, Trey Lamar, same kind of thing. Without even knowing how good he is on the microphone or knowing what his character is or knowing about any of his feuds, you see him in the ring and you're like, okay, we can figure the rest of that stuff out. You're so damn good in the ring that, like, there are things for you to do on mainstream television. You know what I mean? So that's just a big endorsement from me to Trey Lamar. I really think that he's going to be a huge part of the next couple. Well, I say the next couple years of the indies, but damn, I was saying the same kind of thing about, you know, someone like Blake Christian, who, you know, he's been doing work in New Japan lately, and he might be one of those guys that I was talking about. You never know, you know? So it's one of those things that's like, these guys are getting so good so fast now that they're kind of leapfrogging the process, some of them, and we'll see how it turns out. But this is a long way of saying I'm very impressed by Trey Lamar. He's very good, very fast, and I think he's got a very, very bright future, as does everybody on these shows. And also, I mean, just shout out to Action Wrestling in general, because I was just going to go over Friday the 13th, but just so you know, if you want to check out Friday Night Fights Part 2, the match list is crazy. This was on November 14th, so one day after the show I just talked about. We had Fred Yehi versus Adam Priest, which was incredible. Senshin versus Billy Starks, which highlighted two of my favorite females in independent wrestling. Billy Starks is going to be the future of all wrestling, male, female, trans, any other gender out there. Like, I think that Billy Starks she will be one of the biggest stars in all of wrestling. She's like 15 right now, and she's already really damn good. She keeps getting so much better every time. I am such a huge fan of hers. We had Logan Creed versus Orion Bishop. Matt Sells versus Jaden Newman was awesome. The finish of Matt's, I will not ruin it for you, but the finish of Matt Sells versus Jaden Newman, please watch this match and tell me what you think about that. And the main event, we had Eric Royal versus Anthony Henry, and I already mentioned that after this match, Anthony Henry and Shug D set up for December the 11th. So huge shout out to Action Wrestling. Check those shows out. Check out everything on IWTV. I mentioned The Collective earlier. They're now putting shows from The Collective that were exclusive to Fight TV. They're now starting to pop up on IWTV as well. I know Sup Swing of the Axe. I know Glory Pro's Are You Wrestling Son are both there already. And more coming, so check it out. IWTV. I think that's, I'm not endorsed by them. I'm not paid to say it, but that is the place to be, I think, to discover talent. It really is. Another place to discover talent, to some degree, we have MLW, right? Major League Wrestling. Let's talk about that right now. Fusion came back. MLW, in my opinion, right now, is kind of the in-between between independentwrestling.tv and signing with a major company. It's kind of taking over, in my opinion, kind of the spot Evolve lived in for a while, right? Like, because people will sign MLW contracts and get some decent money, but also be allowed to work indie dates in most cases and stuff. And they have a ton of talent. The Restart, this was on, I believe it was on Tuesday. No, sorry, it was on Wednesday. It was right before AEW Dynamite. This is free on YouTube, by the way. MLW Fusion, highly recommended. The show started off with Alex Hammerstone defeating Duggan. Not Hacksaw Jim Duggan, by the way, just a guy named Duggan. This was a complete squash. Nightmare Pendulum Finisher 1-2-3. I mean, it was a complete squash, and it was made to basically for people who are new to watching MLW, this was a showcase for Alex Hammerstone. Perfect example. I have a friend, Mike Hughes, who comes over every Wednesday to watch AEW with me. He's a huge AEW fan. I turned on Fusion before AEW. He'd never seen MLW before. The first thing he said when I turned the show on and this match happened, he was like, "Bam, this Hammerstone guy looks like a big deal." And that was the whole point. You know what I mean? He saw that and was like, "This guy looks like a giant star. How do I not know about this guy?" And that's the point. Mission accomplished. Hammerstone actually called out Jacob Fatu after the match, who is the MLW champion. So they're building something really cool there. The next match we had was Myron Reed defeating Brian Pillman Jr., retained his middleweight championship after hitting the, what's he called the move? He calls it the Cabin Crunch, but it's like the white noise. I don't know what, there's so many different names for that move now, but y'all know what I mean. Sheamus did it for a long time, the white noise. And there's others. Orange Cassidy does kind of a variation of it, the beach break, that kind of stuff. But this match was so good. Brian Pillman Jr.'s getting better and better. Myron Reed is getting to the top of that totem pole I keep talking about. He's been talented and ready. I mean, in all honesty, I think he's just as talented as guys like Blake Christian and Alex Zane and those kind of guys. Ben Carter, who, you know, recently signed with the WWE. You know, that kind of stuff. I really think he's in that same boat as those guys. He's just as talented. It's just now with those guys being signed, it's going to give Myron Reed a huge chance to shine. And I am looking forward to seeing more from Myron Reed. He's a guy that I've known for a long time through Glory Pro Wrestling. And I will be shocked if a year from now I'm here on this show and I'm still talking about Myron Reed on the indies. I really think Myron Reed's going to get a big contract somewhere, and his time's coming. I'm super impressed with him. And also, shout out to Alicia Toot. It was cool to see her. She was doing an interview with Davey Boy Smith Jr. during this show. I'm a big fan of hers. I think she's gorgeous, and I think she's incredible at her job. I mean, just, I'm a huge fan of Alicia, and Alicia Toot. Yeah, it's funny, because I messed up her first name, but getting her last name right. Everyone says a tout, and I make sure it's a toot. I've done my research on that, but I respect her a lot. She's, especially for her age too, right? She's like in her mid-20s, and she's already doing such great stuff with wrestling, and she's such a great interviewer. Huge fan of Alicia, jeez. And then in the main event, we had Jacob Fatu defeating Davey Boy Smith Jr. to retain the MLW Heavyweight Championship. This was really good. I mean, Fatu finishes with his moonsault, which is just a beautiful moonsault, and Fatu is just so damn talented. MLW is very, I don't want to say very lucky, because obviously, like, they had the eye for talent to sign him. Like, it wasn't a luck move, but they are they should be very fortunate, and they should be given kudos and credit for signing him and putting him in the spot that he's in the company, because Fatu is, he is a star. He's a guy who eventually he will be in the WWE or AEW, I think, and he will be huge. He can basically be everything that, the comparison isn't really fair, but I feel like he's everything that, like, Umaga should have been. Like, Umaga was this, like, destructive force, but he didn't really, in my opinion, his moveset wasn't that impressive, and he finished people with, like, the thumb to the neck, and he was very agile for a guy his size, don't get me wrong, but Fatu is, like, he's not as large, but, like, he's scary, and his moveset's awesome, and he's very believable, and he carries himself as a champion, and I'm very impressed with him. I thought Davey Boy Smith Jr. looked great as well. He looks significantly better in the ring and as a character and just everything since his days in WWE. Obviously, I followed his stuff in New Japan since then and all that stuff, and even his mixed martial arts stuff that he's been doing. But yeah, I think that Davey Boy Smith Jr. looked really good, but I do for sure think that keeping the belt on Fatu is the right move. And it looks like, and after the match, that's right, Hammerstone actually came out and hit Fatu with a chair. So we will see where this heads. I mean, obviously we're going to get Hammerstone and Fatu, and that's going to be awesome. So great stuff from MLW. Really, really happy to see them back. Moving on, we have results for Impact Wrestling. Started off with Moose versus Willie Mack. Moose gets the win by referee stoppage, hits a spear, gets in full mount, and just lands elbows and ground and pound until the referee stops it. This was very similar to last week, except Moose didn't go overboard and keep the attack going and get disqualified after, so Moose just straight up gets the win. It's one of those things, right? Like, I am a huge Willie Mack fan. I don't want to sound like a broken record for longtime listeners. Y'all know how I feel about Willie Mack. I think that he should be, like, the top star of Impact Wrestling. But I have to give Impact credit for the way that they have rejuvenated Moose's career. I think that he was really floundering when he started this whole thing with the TNT title. But through his feud with through his feud with EC3... Love Ethan Page, too, by the way. But his feud with EC3, with that feud, it really elevated him again. That match was kind of strange at Bound for Glory, I'm not going to lie. But I think the story was there, and the story made sense. And it made Moose look like a bigger badass coming out of that feud. And since then, what he's done to Willie Mack the last couple weeks, Moose is looking pretty dangerous, and I am definitely more interested in Moose now than I was a few months ago, for sure. That said, they need to figure something out with Willie Mack. They really do, because he is just so damn talented. After that, we had Suicide and Geo were supposed to have a match, but Joe Doering and Eric Young come out and just beat the hell out of both of them. They cut a promo afterwards, basically saying that the world is theirs, and Eric Young and Joe Doering, I think this is it's a really cool pairing. It makes a ton of sense. Doering, super successful from All Japan Pro Wrestling. One of the most kind of under-the-radar guys over the last, like, decade. And this is this could be really interesting, because we know Eric Young is capable of winning the world title on his own. But now that he has this bodyguard, or whatever you want to call him, this guy, this, like, hitman with him, Joe Doering, I'm very, very interested. Because it'd be one thing... Let me put it this way. Historically speaking, what I would expect Impact Wrestling to do is Eric Young loses the title, and then he's either never back in the title mix, or he just wins it again randomly, and it kind of all... A lot of the time with Impact Wrestling's title runs, unfortunately, they cut them short, and they hot potato the titles, and before you know it, it's like, okay, well, everyone's been the champion at one point or another, no one really got elevated beyond anyone else. And everyone just kind of winds up staying in the same spot. And Impact Wrestling, just for what it's worth, I think has been really, really good this past year. Like, especially given the circumstances and stuff. I mean, I really think they've been putting on solid shows. I'd put Impact Wrestling's weekly Tuesday show up against Raw any day of the week this entire year. And I honestly think Impact Wrestling's put on, more often than not, Impact Wrestling is a more entertaining show. Which is my personal opinion. And the reason I say that is because... You have guys like Eric Young, who helped carry that company this past year after leaving the WWE. And with this new element of Joe Doering with Eric Young, it's something where if Eric Young was to just, like, beat Rich Swann and win the title back without Joe Doering, it's like, okay, well, what was the point of putting the belt on Rich Swann then? But if Eric Young was to beat Rich Swann for the title and... It was because now he has Joe Doering in his corner, and now they're completely unstoppable. And now, you know, even though Eric Young lost the title in, like, a month or two last time, maybe now it's like, shit, this guy might hold the title for, like, a whole year or something. Because, like, who's going to stop Joe Doering in him, right? It adds an element that's different, and I really, really like it. Great stuff. Moving on, next match we had Brian Myers defeated Crazy Steve. Got him with the lariat. I can't remember what he calls it. It's like it's a play on words from, like, it's like readings from Stanford or something like that. It's definitely a callback to like jabbing at the WWE. I can't remember the exact name of the move, but he gets him with the lariat. Definitely the right move in my opinion. Brian Myers, keep pushing him. I'm a huge fan of his. Impact Wrestling has done more to make Brian Myers look good in the last 3 months than WWE did in the last decade. You know what I mean? I don't want to sit here and just bash WWE. I don't want this to be like a, just an anti-WWE show, but sometimes I just have to be honest about some of this stuff. Like, they had Brian Myers under contract for like 10 years. And I know there was times where there was short times where he was gone and stuff, but let's say the better part of 10 years or longer, right? And Impact Wrestling, in a very short amount of time, has made me care so much more about Brian Myers on the wrestling show. I already cared about him because I'm a huge fan of the Major Brothers Wrestling podcast and their YouTube channel and stuff. So I follow Myers' career already, but to see the push he's getting in Impact, I like it a lot. Really, really good stuff, and it makes sense, and the fans are behind him. So keep doing that kind of stuff. Really, really good. After that, we had Havoc and Nevaeh defeating Alicia and Tennille Dashwood. The finish came with a sit-out face buster and cutter combo for the 1-2-3. Hernandez beat Falabaugh in the next match. Not a whole lot to talk about here. This whole thing with Hernandez and Falabaugh, I just don't care about the story, and it's really strange to me to see Falabaugh now because, or no, sorry, not Falabaugh, to see Hernandez, because Hernandez used to, he showed so much potential. Like back in the early days of Impact, or TNA wrestling, Hernandez was viewed as like this guy who could have been their version of like a, not even like their version of like a Brock Lesnar, or I'm trying to think of who would maybe compare him to. And it's kind of cool that you can't, because Hernandez had this mixture of size and strength, and he did the Undertaker dive over the top rope, and I mean the athleticism. He was like this guy that just seemed like a can't miss main event star for Impact and TNA, and it just never really panned out that way. And now he's just like kind of this weird, he's kind of like this weird character. I can't even describe it. And I don't mean, this isn't meant as a diss, but like, he reminds me of like a janitor. Like this guy who like walks around and like looks like kind of like janitor's clothing with like this big mustache. And just, he doesn't really seem like intimidating to me anymore. He really seems more like, it's almost, it's like comedic. And like him and Falabaugh have been basically like feuding over like a sack of money and stuff, and it's like it's just not, it just isn't good. Hernandez, super talented guy, but it's also one of those things where like, do I really want to see him getting pushed now? You know, like 10 years ago, hell yeah, but like now it's, I don't know. I don't know if it's salvageable or not. I really don't. Moving on, we had the main event, which was awesome. We had the Rascals taking on Trey Miguel and Rich Swann. Of course, this was the Rascals send-off from Impact Wrestling. In the Rascals side, of course, it was Dez and Wentz, and then we had Miguel and Rich Swann on the other side. Rich Swann and Trey Miguel wound up getting the win. Basically, what happened was Rich hit thrust kicks to the back of the head of Dez, and there was a cool moment where they were all, you know, dancing together in the ring after the match. And right before the show goes off the air, Sami Callihan and Ken Shamrock attack the Rascals and Rich Swann, and that's that. The Rascals are gone from Impact Wrestling, but from what I've heard, I don't think it's going to be very long before y'all see them again somewhere else. So this is definitely not the end for the Rascals. I think they're only going to become bigger stars. I'm interested to see how they're used, where they're heading. But I'll leave it at that. I'm a huge fan of those three guys. I wish them nothing but success. Great run in Impact Wrestling, and I am very much looking forward to what's next for those guys. And one other thing I want to mention, Ethan Page, who he had a backstage segment during this show. I know that he's leaving Impact Wrestling soon, or he's going to be a free agent at the very least, and I'd imagine he probably won't re-sign. Don't know that for sure, but there has been advertisements on Twitter lately for his last independent wrestling match, and that leads me to believe he's heading somewhere soon, or he's re-signing with Impact. But Josh Alexander, to my knowledge, has another year left on his contract, so it's going to be really interesting. I love the Team of the North. I think that they are the best tag team in the world. The PWI recently did the PWI 50. They ranked the 50 top tag teams in the world. I believe they had the North at number 4. I would have had them at number 1. Their number 1 was FTR. For me, it would have been between the North and the team of Omega and Hangman for this year. So that's just my personal opinion. I think the North should have gotten it. But that being said, who knows how much longer we're going to see that team. Because if Ethan goes and does his own thing, which he'll be successful at, by the way, and so will Josh Alexander. Both guys are going to have successful singles careers, for sure. They're both super talented. But they remind me a lot of the Steiner brothers from the sense that, well, of course, Josh Alexander wears the headgear, which reminds people of, you know, Rick Steiner. But on top of that, I think that, like, the Steiner brothers, I don't know, I can't say, like, they were underrated or people don't give them credit, because they definitely do, but when I saw that, when I see that tag team, I think to myself, this is one of the best tag teams I've ever seen. And, but then you had like Scott Steiner was like a world heavyweight championship level guy as a singles guy. Rick Steiner was basically the same. I mean, Scott was more successful like at the end of the day, but there were plans to put their, I mean, if you believe the stories, there were plans to put the title on Rick Steiner. He was apparently supposed to beat Ric Flair for the title. Back in like the late 80s, early 90s. And so Rick Steiner, I mean, he was super over as a babyface, you know, whether it was in the tag team or in singles. And the reason I use that comparison is because I think the same thing of the North. As a tag team, I think they're incredible. But singles, I think they can both be world champions on their own too. So really looking forward to seeing how that all plays out. Moving on, we have 205 Live. Show started off with the Bollywood Boys defeating Ever-Eyes. Finish came when, basically, so Samir hits Chase from Ever-Eyes with a camera, and the referee doesn't see it, and that's what leads to the 1-2-3. I mean, decent match. It's cool seeing that there's, you know, it's two actual tag teams, so that's nice. You know, the Bollywood Boys and Ever-Eyes, there's no 205 tag team titles or, you know, cruiserweight tag team titles. Nor do I think there should be. WCW tried that right at the end of their dying days. And there were some really cool teams and good matches, but the belts just never really, I don't think they really would have fit in, even if WCW would have, you know, stayed around. And obviously WWE didn't do anything with those belts once they absorbed the company. So I don't think there's going to be like cruiserweight tag team titles, but it is nice to see four cruiserweight sized guys go in there and have a great tag team match, and both are actual tag teams. So there's that. We got a promo from Curt Stallion, and I thought it was really good. I talked about Curt a little bit at the top of the show. I am a huge fan of his. I really think the world of Curt Stallion as a person and as a wrestler. He's another one of those guys I've gotten to talk to in person many times before he was signed to the company. And he's a guy that everyone roots for. He's a real good dude, and he really deserves it. And I don't know if he's going to beat Santos Escobar. As a matter of fact, if I had to make a prediction, I'd predict that Escobar is going to retain. But I love that Curt Stein's getting that opportunity. And in the main event of this show, the only other match we had was Ashanti the Adonis defeating Tony Nese. Got the win with his finisher, the long kiss goodnight. I like this a lot, too, because, you know, Tony Nese, I think right now is best served in the role of putting over these younger guys. Ashanti the Adonis is someone who, even before the name change, I can't even remember what they called him before this now, but, you know, he was basically like a 205 Live jobber for weeks and months. And after the name change, after getting a little bit of confidence on NXT, you know, Ashanti, I like it. You know, they keep pushing these guys. And we've seen stuff in recent weeks where, you know, Mansoor and Brian Kendrick have, you know, like, you know, Kendrick has gained respect for Mansoor and that kind of stuff. And maybe we'll see something soon between Ashanti and Mansoor. That'd be good. And I really think that guys like Tony Nese and Arya Daivari, those kind of guys who have been lingering around 205 Live for years now, but not really doing anything on Raw, SmackDown, or NXT, I think that this is the right thing for them to be doing right now. I think that they should be helping that next generation of guys. And, you know, I think Tony Nese is still he's a valuable guy for the company, for sure. Like, you could plug Tony Nese in against anybody on Raw or SmackDown right now, or NXT, and he'll have good matches. But if you're the WWE, I also think you look at guys like Curt Stallion, and you're like, well, this guy's younger, this guy has a lot of, you know, indie buzz, he's hungry as hell, and, you know, we're going to probably get more years out of a guy like Kurt Stein than Tony Nese right now. And if they can have someone like, or Ashanti the Adonis being the actual example right here rather than Kurt Stallion, like Ashanti, you know, they could be looking at him going, hey, this could be like one of our top guys, you know, years down the road. Tony Nese, don't know if he's ever going to get that. Tony Nese is, I hate to say it like this, he's a good hand. He's a guy who is really good at making other people look good, and he always looks good himself, but you never really believe he's going to be, like, he's been the Cruiserweight champion, but I just don't see Tony Nese going on to ever being like the NXT champion or anything like that. Maybe they see something like that in Adonis, you know, maybe. So that all this to say, I thought the results all make sense this week. I really liked Kurt Stallion's taped promo during the show. And yeah, 205 Live, good stuff. It's becoming more and more, you know, I say it all the time. It's a joke at this point. It's a running joke that I say this every week. But 205 Live for years has been a show with no consequence. If you miss the show, you're not really missing anything. But in recent weeks, it's really getting to a point where it's like, if you're missing 205 Live, you are missing out on some really good stuff. And I would recommend it to everybody because this is just me speculating, but you know, I was talking about MLW kind of being the new Evolve for the indies, in my opinion. I think within the WWE system, I see 205 Live as kind of the new Evolve because NXT is a mainstream product now. It's just like Raw and SmackDown. I mean, I think it's more entertaining than Raw and SmackDown. I think the writing is better and the matches are better. I'm more personally interested in NXT than Raw or SmackDown. But they're all mainstream shows at this point on USA Network. NXT, that is, you know, being on USA Network along with Raw. SmackDown, of course, being on Fox. But the point is, they don't really have, like, NXT was kind of like their minor league feeder system to a degree. Now it really isn't that. Now it's just a third brand. So 205 Live, I mean, I think they should stop it. I think they should probably rebrand the show so it isn't exclusive just to cruiserweights and let that be the show that's kind of what NXT used to be. And I think if they did that and they were pushing guys like Ashanti and Kurt Stallion and August Gray and Mansoor, but then you also had like the new crop of guys coming in, like Alex Zane, like Blake Christian, or sorry, don't know if he's going or not, like Ben Carter. Ben Carter is what I meant to say, not Blake Christian. I've heard Ben Carter's probably going to go to NXT UK, but the point is, but then maybe even a guy like Josh Briggs, who isn't 205 or under, but he isn't necessarily someone they might not use on NXT right away, so there's a lot of options there for this 205 Live show, and I think maybe if they rebranded it, they can call it Evolve. You can call it whatever you want, but or you can just keep doing what you're doing with 205 Live, but just keep bringing in more and more people of that size. The point is, I think 205 Live is going to get a lot better soon. I think it's going to become a show that gets a lot more buzz and a show that becomes can't miss. So keep your eyes out for it. And if that's what happens, the people like y'all who have been listening to this show, it's going to be a big reward for all of y'all because these are the people we've been talking about for, you know, I'm coming up on 2 years on this show. The next episode that I do of this show will be my 2-year anniversary of doing the Fightful Weekender. So that's something I pride myself on with this show, just so y'all know, is I really pride myself on trying to tell y'all about people that I think are really good before many people are talking about them. And then the big reward is, you know, we've been talking about Kurt Stallion on the show for 2 years, and now he's signed to WWE, and we were talking about Marco Stunt before AEW existed. We were talking about so many of these people. We were talking about Eddie Kingston, and then he blew up in AEW, and, you know, all this stuff. And we're talking about, you know, Chuck Taylor, we're talking about PWG, and Keith Lee, and you know, it's really cool to see these people become big stars. And this show is something I pride myself on being, you know, I love being the kind of person who can tell y'all about these people and maybe you don't know about them already. And you listen to this and you go, hey, maybe I'll check that guy out or that girl out or, you know, whoever. And it's really cool to see where everything's going right now with a lot of these people. Moving on, speaking of NXT UK, I just said that, you know, I think that Ben Carter might be heading there soon. Let's talk a little NXT UK. Got results for this week. Started off with Joe Coffey defeating Sam Gradwell. The finish came after Coffey hit his finisher, all the best for the bells. Always a mouthful for me to say the finishing move there. Got the 1-2-3. Not surprising. Joe Coffey's one of their guys. You know, it's just one of those things. I don't know if Joe Coffey's ever going to be the NXT UK heavyweight champion, but he'll always be a upper tier guy in this company. Got some backstage stuff with Jordan Devlin talking to Sid Scala. And then he basically wants to be recognized as cruiserweight champion, but it's a whole mess, right? Like, he held the title, COVID happened, they crowned a new champion in Escobar, and they're trying to figure all that out. Kenny Williams and Amir Jordan both want shots at the title. That's basically what the point of that was. We get a video package for Dragunov, and I mean, that guy's just the man. His match with Walter, I talk about that all the time, but you know, that was probably the best match of 2020. I know I mentioned that Manders versus Graham Bell is probably my favorite match of 2020, but this one is also one of my favorite matches of 2020, and it's probably, technically speaking, the best match of 2020. So just going to throw that out there. Huge shout out to Walter, whatever you want to call him. I say both because when I was introduced to Walter, I was listening to a lot of UK commentary, and most of them called him Walter. So I'm never sure what the actual pronunciation is supposed to be. But him and Dragunov, just incredible stuff. Ilya Dragunov, he is going to be a massive star. I really think it's a matter of time before they bring him to NXT Raw or SmackDown. I don't think they're going to keep him kind of tucked away in NXT UK for very long. After that, we had Pretty Deadly defeating Ashton Smith and Oliver Carter. Finish came when it was a... what do you call it? Like grabbing the tights, a roll up of grabbing the tights for the 1-2-3 dirty victory. After that, Saxon Huxley gets the win over Levi Muir, got the win with a corner lariat. Running kick in the corner into a lariat, I should say, for the 1-2-3. We then get a graphic before the main event says that Jordan Devlin and Amir Jordan will wrestle for the NXT Cruiserweight Championship next week. So the NXT UK Cruiserweight Championship, whatever you want to call it, that'll be coming up, so good stuff. And there was also a video package before that for A-Kid and Trent Seven, who are going to be wrestling in the finals of the Heritage Cup tournament soon. But as far as the main event of this show, we had Kaylee Ray versus Piper Nevin. Kaylee Ray retains the NXT UK Women's Championship, gets the win, where basically the finish happens where they are on... it's a no DQ match. They're up high on these boxes, and Kaylee Ray is about to get thrown off by Piper Nevin, and then Ginny winds up hitting Piper with a chair, and Kaylee Ray basically falls on type of Piper with one arm to get to 1-2-3. So it's something where Ginny costs Piper the match, and Kaylee Ray gets out with the title by the skin of her teeth, keeps Piper looking good, keeps Kaylee Ray with the belt. This all makes sense. It was a really good match, by the way. So, I mean, check this one out. It was a false count anywhere match for the NXT UK Women's Championship, but Kaylee Ray getting the win. I'm a fan of both, by the way. I really like Piper. She has a different look, a different kind of moveset, and I like her a lot. Like, she's very likable. And Kaylee Ray's just super talented. She's the right person, in my opinion, to be the NXT UK Women's Champion right now. So, all good stuff. Moving on, we have Ring of Honor results. Just some quick stuff here. Only two matches. And something kind of interesting to talk about. So, first match we had, the Briscoe Brothers defeat the Soldiers of Savagery. More importantly, after this match, the Briscoe Brothers wind up talking to EC3 because EC3 comes out and they're setting up a bunch of stuff with EC3 and the Briscoes. EC3 being in Ring of Honor is a very weird fit for me. I don't know if it really works yet or not, but I do like EC3 being kind of like this vigilante, non-contracted guy who just kind of pops up different places. It's just him and the Briscoes is a very strange pairing. And the only other match we had, oh, and by the way, Jay Briscoe challenges EC3 to a match. So there's that. So that'll be really good. And after that, we had the main event, only other match of the show, Shane Taylor versus Kenny King. This was really good, especially Shane Taylor's finisher, which I'm trying to think if he has a name for it. Basically, what he does is he does like a running Rikishi driver. So it's like a running sit-out power, or sorry, running sit-out pile driver, basically, and it looks completely brutal. Shane Taylor, super talented. Ring of Honor, once again, I don't want to say anything that has to do with luck, but they're very fortunate to have him, because I think he's a guy that they kind of took a chance on. Like, he was good, but he turned out to be way better than what Ring of Honor could have ever expected, I think. And he's really one of the cornerstones, centerpieces, I should say, of the company right now. He really is. And I'm a big fan of his. I think Shane Taylor has a ton of upside, and I think it's the right move for him to beat Kenny King. We got some quick primetime live results for UWN. Usually there is some National Wrestling Alliance kind of bleed over into these. Usually we have some NWA stuff. And in past weeks, we've been seeing tournament matches to crown the first ever UWN Heavyweight Champion. This week was kind of an off week when it came to that stuff. We didn't have any of it, but I will still give you the results because we've been talking about it week after week. Start off with Slice Boogie defeating Keita Murray. We had one called Manders, who I keep talking about. Manders versus Graham Bell, baby. Action Wrestling, Tyrone, Georgia. Check it out. Manders out there just killing it everywhere, defeating Richie Slade. We had Lindsay Snow and Ruby Reyes fighting to a double disqualification. Danny Limelight, who had Papo Esco in his corner, defeated Clark Connors. And for the CWFH Heritage Heavyweight Championship, Ray Rosas defeated Andy Brown to retain the championship. That's it for UWN, and let's do a recap of Being the Elite, and we'll get on out of here. So this episode of BTE was titled, what do they call it? It was just Trent vs. Silver. That's right, just Trent vs. Silver. And the big thing there being that at the end of the episode, the BTE title will be on the line, Trent's first defense against John Silver. Show starts off with Alice Reynolds and John Silver trying to recruit Frankie Kazarian into the Dark Order. And basically, what I liked about this, because I'm not huge on the Kazarian stuff, he does the do-ya thing, and I'm just not into Kazarian. I don't know what else to say. Like, they do this skit almost every week on Being the Elite with him, and him having anger management problems and the whole do-ya thing, and I'm either just missing something, or maybe people love it, and I'm just not one of them. I don't know. Jerry Lynn does show up during this, though, and says that Frankie needs to go to anger management, and I thought that was hilarious, because, like, I love Jerry Lynn. Like, Jerry Lynn's the man. Jerry Lynn can do no wrong. So it's cool to see Jerry Lynn involved in this, and yeah, Frankie winds up going off on Jerry Lynn because he wants him to go to anger management. Peter Avalon is sitting around having a drink, and the hands show up, Arthur and Trevor, and they just completely, rip Peter Avalon to shreds, and they wind up all getting really drunk together. After that, pretty funny, we see a rib from Sammy Guevara. So basically, for real, not in story here, Matt and Nick Jackson are talking to Sammy Guevara, and Sammy's apologizing to them, and he shows them that he's cut the BTE championship in half with a saw, and he's basically saying, like, it was a joke that they were going to be doing for Sammy's YouTube channel, and the joke went sour, and basically Sammy accidentally cut this title in half, and Matt and Nick Jackson are doing the best they can to stay cool, and they're like, man, I don't know what we're going to do. Like, this title just, you know, we just had this title for 1 week. And Sammy's, like, covering for everyone else. He's like, yeah, I told everyone else involved to, like, get lost. And anyway, it all turns out that Sammy actually was ribbing the Young Bucks. And he had a different title made that he cut in half. And the Young Bucks are laughing their asses off. They think it's hilarious. And Sammy points out that he's got hidden cameras all over the place. And
It was really funny. Really good joke by Sammy Guevara. He definitely got the Young Bucks. After that, we get more stuff with Frank Kazarian, which is just like, why? Once again, Frank Kazarian in the ring, huge fan. Like, have been for a long time. Loved his X Division stuff. Loved his short run in the WWE, even. I watched his matches on Velocity, believe it or not, back in the day. It's just this whole character that he has is just annoying to me. And we got more of that. Brandon Cutler asked Frankie if he's on a streak now, because now that he has two wins in a row, and Frankie calls him a mark, which, I mean, that's funny, but then he winds up chasing him down the hall, and it's like, I still don't get where that's from. I'm sure there's people who get it, I just don't. It's just one of those things where every now and then there are skits that Being the Elite does over and over again that are just misses for me. 80% of the time, they nail it. But the other 20% is when it's like speaking Spanglish or that private party $12 thing that they, whatever it was called, thing that they did, like the cinematic skits that they had for like months. Or it's the big swole public swole announcement or whatever. Or it's this. You know, like there are certain things where they just totally miss for me and they keep doing it over and over and like I'm just not into it. But what I am into is the Dark Order. So after that, we had Dark Order talking to basically Grayson's talking to Private Party, and Private Party's talking about how lame the Dark Order parties have been. And Anna Jay is walking by. Grayson tells Private Party to be cool, and Anna Jay shoves him over a table. Basically, what's happening is Anna Jay is just straight cucking. Stu Grayson in the Dark Order, like she is the boss, and he cannot do anything about it. It's an interesting dynamic. After that, we get a basically live action Among Us, where if I'm not I know what the, I'm familiar with the game. I've never played it. I know what it is, but those of you who have played Among Us or watch streamers play the game, you'll probably get a kick out of this. But for someone like me, once again, it's kind of a miss because. Like I respect what they're doing because Among Us is a very popular game, but like for me, I don't play it. I don't watch anyone else play it. I know what it is, but there's probably a lot of people that watch this that have no clue what this was all about. Up next, we had it's a segment where Chuck Taylor and Orange Cassidy are pouring very small amounts of beer on Trent after he wins the BT title to celebrate, and Trent says he doesn't want the belt, but he's willing to defend it. We then see the Dark Order and they're hang out or layer or whatever, and Silver's still bummed out because he lost the biggest match of his career against Orange Cassidy at the last pay-per-view, and Anna Jay's mad because Silver wouldn't hug her last week, and then Silver winds up just hugging Ten again, which is just so funny. And then they all just wind up just roasting Five afterwards and make him and they cut his hair. I mean, it's very silly, but this is the kind of stuff I actually really do enjoy. After that, we get a really interesting kind of segment between Matt Hardy and the Young Bucks. Basically, Hardy's like humble bragging about, you know, the TLC concept and how big of a star he was and still is and how he wants to do bigger things in AEW. And he's really annoying Matt and Nick because Hardy basically says that like the Young Bucks will eventually become big deals one day, not really acknowledging that like they already are big deals. They're already the AEW tag champs. They already started this company. And it seems like a new character for Matt Hardy, which is probably a really good thing because there's only so much, especially with no fans or limited fans, that they can do with the broken Matt stuff with all the other versions of Matt Hardy. It could be really interesting seeing a different kind of heel, cocky, arrogant, aloof, kind of backhanded compliment, humble bragging version of Matt Hardy. I think that's kind of where it's heading. So we'll see where that goes. And at the end of the show, we see Trent defending the BT title in his first defense against John Silver. They are flipping water bottles. Basically, the goal, very hard to explain. Most people are going to know what I'm talking about, but it's, you know, you put a certain amount of water in the water bottles and you are trying to flip them so that they land straight up. And Silver winds up getting the win. He's the first to three successful flips. And he starts doing the Daniel Bryan yes chant as BT ends. So that's going to do it for Being the Elite, and that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Make sure to shoot me a follow on Twitter at @FightTalk_FIGHTTALK_. Until next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.